From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
To the people of Illinois and the people outside of our state who've been reluctant to invest in Illinois because of the insider deals and cronyism, I say this. I'm nobody that nobody sent.
Let me offer my personal congratulations to Representative Durkin and to the other House Republicans upon your election to the House and also upon the election of Governor Rauner. I and the House Democrats wish to welcome you back to the active participation in state government.
At the beginning of today's session, each of you should have received a copy of our policy agenda. We should consider it as a whole, not as a list of individual initiatives.
Now take my whole agenda. He did say that. I wrote that note down because I was like, wow, there's a way to enter into a negotiation, isn't it? To say that it's my way or the highway.
Speaker Madigan has been the one constant in Illinois politics for more than 30 years. We've been driven into the ditch.
He will force a strike with no alternative, and then he will fire every state employee, just like Ronald Reagan did with the air traffic controllers.
People seem to be governing for their position and not the people of Illinois. People seem to be governing for their politics and not the people of Illinois.
Perhaps it's time to change our state model from Land of Lincoln to We Don't Care.
And we hope you care. We'll be looking back on the year 2015 in Illinois politics and government on State Week on this first weekend of the new year. I'm Bill Wheelhouse, our panel on State Week this week. Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Brian Mackey, State House Reporter for WUIS, Illinois Public Radio. Sean Crawford, News Director for WUIS. And Jamie Dunn, Executive Editor of Illinois Issues. And Sean and Jamie, welcome to the show today.
Glad to be here.
Thanks.
And we're looking back on the year 2015. Obviously, a couple themes that ran through some of that audio we heard at the beginning of the show included a new governor coming in to shake things up and perhaps agendas that ended up not being met necessarily in terms of negotiations. So at the conclusion of the year, a new governor is in place and a budget stalemate is also in place right now as we speak. I will throw it open to the panel and I'll throw it open to Brian Mackey. You were sitting at the inauguration back in January of this past year. Did that man shake up Springfield, Bruce Rauner?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say that things have not been shaken up, whether it's resulted in quite the shaking that the people of Illinois wanted remains to be seen. I mean, we're still shaking. I don't know how much further I can drag this metaphor into the discussion right now. But it's definitely, the governor promised that he was going to stick to his agenda. And he says that, Illinois is in an existential crisis, a death spiral, he used to say during the campaign, and that it, needed some tough medicine. And by golly, he is pretty much stuck to his guns. He has a very strong belief that public sector unions like AFSCME and SEIU are, he hasn't said this recently, but in the past he's described them as basically a cancer on government in America. And so he has done everything in his power to try and hold up progress on the state budget and some other areas until he can get the changes he thinks need to be made to how those unions interact with government, not just at the state level, but throughout Illinois and local governments and school districts as well.
Jamie Dunn, as you observe state government from your perch at Illinois Issues, what's your opinion and view of shake up the state government?
Well, I think everyone watching state government and probably most everyone in it right now would agree it's been a rough year. It's been, I think, frustrating for Democrats and Republicans to not see a budget move forward and to see kind of this just treading water, as the governor has said, on his agenda. One piece of that agenda did move forward. It was a change to unemployment insurance, but it was something that was basically agreed on by both sides, business and labor. So it was, you know, kind of very low-hanging fruit. And that's about all we saw so far out of the agenda. So it's just a lot of kind of frustration that things are so logjammed.
I think it was a year of muddling through, Charlie Wheeler.
Well, and I would say we still haven't managed to muddle through. We're still without a budget because of continuing appropriations. In other words, laws that say this has to be paid regardless of whether the legislature and the governor included in a budget. And because of court orders, we're spending at about roughly I would say maybe $4 billion to $5 billion more than we're going to have at the end of the fiscal year. We're spending 90% of last year's budget at last year's levels, and we've left unfunded the other 10%, which unfortunately includes higher education. And there's no way you can go, I don't think, a whole fiscal year without providing some money for higher education, if for no other reason then there are a lot of low-income students who are going to be concerned about whether or not they're going to get the monetary assistance program grants that they're relying on to help finance their education. Now, the universities, to their credit, have decided, okay, Charlie, we're going to give you that MAP grant. We'll pretend that the state has given us the money. We'll put this in your financial aid package. But me, as the student, I have to wonder, what happens if the money never comes through? Are the universities going to come back and ask me and say, I'm sorry, but we never got the money from the state, so now you're on the hook for that part of your student financial aid? I mean, that's a real concern, and I think it's a real disservice to the people. The governor may have every good intention in the world of putting people through the short-term pain for the long-term gain of the anti-union folks, but there's a lot of suffering going on that I'm not sure that the governor, vacationing wherever he is, actually experiences on a personal level.
Sean Crawford, was this something you had any inkling we would see when you were listening to that speech back in January?
We all knew that it was going to be a difficult year to get a budget done. You have a Democrat-controlled legislature, super majorities in both chambers, and then you have a Republican governor coming in. They're not going to see eye to eye. You knew that was going to be difficult. So it didn't surprise me when they didn't get things done by the end of May. I think most people felt as though something would happen in the very few, you know, months right after that or weeks afterward. It didn't happen. The key thing, I think, became when they were able to pay state employees, because if they were not able to pay state employees, government could have ground to a halt. And that hasn't happened. I think the most interesting point of this from a year ago to now is, if you'd have told me we would not have a budget at this point, I would have thought everything is shutting down around us. Everything is terrible, and people are going to be, you know, rioting in the streets over this. That's not happened. Most of the reasons, like Charlie pointed out, the continuing appropriations, court orders, have allowed state government to, I would say, the majority of the public to continue on as normal. They don't realize there's an issue, but the issue is going to be coming, I think, when it comes time to pay for this, and we haven't been able to figure out a way to do that.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, that's been part of a concerted strategy, Sean. As you mentioned, the governor went to court himself to help make sure state employees got paid. The Democrats passed a very badly out-of-balance budget after the governor had himself proposed a badly out-of-balance budget earlier this year. But the Democrats passed this budget. The governor said, no, we can't afford it. I'm going to veto this entire budget, except the part that makes sure schools open on time, because you can imagine if parents across Illinois could not send their kids to school in mid-August, they would suddenly start paying a lot closer attention to what's happening in state government and what the governor's policies that, you know, he's doing this sort of very limited quasi-shutdown where it's only affecting people who do not have a great deal of voice and pull, right? It's not as though ComEd or the casinos or the big moneyed interests that have a lot of weight and clout in Illinois government are feeling the effects of the shutdown. It's parents who have children with developmental disabilities and people who have maybe a brother or sister with a mental health or substance abuse problem and they can't get treatment, victims of domestic violence, people like that who depend on state contractors to take care of them, what are often referred to as the most vulnerable residents of Illinois. Those are the ones, along with, as Charlie mentioned, higher education, that are really feeling the brunt of this shutdown. And the governor at one point reportedly bragged in a House Republican caucus meeting that, you know, this was his plan. He had sort of engineered it, and we didn't, you know, we didn't have to have a shutdown the way they do in Washington. If you recall, when the Republicans in Washington helped shut down the government, you had veterans breaking down the barricades to get to the World War II memorial. There's just no good visuals like that in Illinois to kind of seize public attention.
The one thing you could see happening here, or we are see happening, is, nobody's approved a budget. You've mentioned that their spending is out of whack. We're spending excessively compared to revenues. So to kind of paraphrase what another governor had said once, Springfield is spending like a drunken sailor. I don't know how you fix that midway through.
I would kind of disagree with that, because Springfield is spending at the same level that it spent last year. The big difference is that the tax hike that had been enacted several years ago to help pay for pension costs, to help bring down the huge backlog of bills, was allowed to roll back to much lower levels. And so we're spending at roughly the same rate as last year, but we have been deprived of $4 to $5 billion in revenue, and that's what the big problem is.
Bill,
had the tax rates been kept at the same level, we wouldn't have this problem. We'd be able to fund all this stuff.
I do think the argument can be made, maybe not drunken sailor, but that we're spending in kind of a mindless way, though, because a budget plan, you know, was not passed. If the state was going to make cuts to let the tax increase sunset, or perhaps increase some revenue and make some cuts, there would have been debate about what programs, you know, were more worthy of funding and what weren't, and that sort of thing. And that just didn't happen. It's all been this piecemeal court approach. So maybe not drunken sailor, maybe zombie or robot.
It's like an autopilot or something.
Exactly.
An autopilot with no live pilots sitting there to take over the controls. Jamie, you mentioned, and Charlie, you've all alluded to some of the state budget right now kind of being funded by court decisions in a way. Speaking of courts, courts this year, the Supreme Court ruled on the constitutionality of a pension overhaul program, Sean Crawford, and that was supposed to be the key that would help unlock fiscal solvency in Illinois. But the Supreme Court said they didn't like the proposal, that it was unconstitutional. I guess they didn't comment on like or dislike necessarily. But
we certainly know that employee unions did not like it, and they, of course, are the ones that really fought this. Basically, it went back to the 1970 Constitution, the provision in there that says that the pension benefits cannot be diminished. And in a nutshell, that was what they relied on to make this decision. Where this goes from here is a big question. I know that it has come up in some recent meetings, supposedly, that there was some discussion about we need to do something on pensions, but it didn't sound like any plan was necessarily in the works. And when you can't get your own budget put together, that seems to be even a bigger ask, is to get a pension plan together. Maybe we'll see something in the coming year, maybe we won't. But again, that was money that I think the state was hoping to rely on going forward, and will not be able to do so, at least at this point.
Probably also worth mentioning that all of us on the panel today are members of the state university retirement system, so some of us closer than others to collecting those benefits. But I do think that, you know, Sean, you made a point that pension discussions are still going on right now. And the governor, we've seen him sort of modify a little bit his position on whether his plan would still be constitutional based on what the Illinois Supreme Court said. A lot of people think it would not be, but he's maintained that he thinks some of it can withstand that further court scrutiny. And he's also called for a constitutional amendment in the future to sort of try and undo ironclad protection that the Constitution affords to state pensioners.
Well, I would suggest that anybody who is at least marginally literate and able to read the language of the Constitution should have found it no surprise that the Supreme Court says, hey, guys, guess what? When the Constitution says these rights and benefits can't be impaired or diminished, that's exactly what it means. And so now people are sitting around scratching their head and picking their nose and trying to figure out some way that we can get around this language, when in my mind, the simplest thing to do would be to decide, okay, we're going to re-amortize the debt. We're going to spread it out over a longer period. We're going to do it with level payments, just like you do with a mortgage, and not a plan that's backloaded. And we'll have to bite the bullet. We'll have to come up with more revenue and budget cuts to make it fit, but at least we'll solve the problem. And this nonsense about, well, we're going to amend the Constitution. You can't amend the Constitution to retroactively discharge $111 billion of pension liabilities. It's just not going to work.
A few years ago.
You could do it going forward, but going forward, you could do whatever you want. Going forward, you could say there's no retirement system at all. No guaranteed benefits. There's not going to be a 401k. We offer nothing to employees, and that would be okay. You can do whatever you want going forward, but you can't go back and undo the past.
And going back a few years ago, the state did just that by creating what was known as Tier 2, which is basically a less generous system that new employees would go into. That's been in place for maybe, 4 years or so. And that has come up this year, and the fact that some Rauner appointees didn't feel as though it was generous enough and they had to be supplemented in their income. I think the state superintendent of schools is one of those people. So again, this issue is a lot harder, I think. You want good people to come and work for government. I'm not believing that government should, put gold plated everything on the Capitol and such, but I do believe that you want good people in government, and if you pay too little, you're not going to compete with the private sector.
And we've seen the governor himself paying some of his staffers quite a lot of money. I think there's stories about the Secretary of Education, which is a separate position from the State Superintendent of Education. So getting a pretty high salary. I don't remember the figure off the top of my head, but I mean, there's you always have these sort of stories every time there's a new administration about how much they're paying the salaries. I think it gets a little extra attention this year, though, when you have a guy who campaigned that state worker pay is out of control and these benefits are something that, these gold-plated benefits that regular people don't have. And then he comes in and appoints some of his top staffers to get these high salaries.
As we look at pensions in 2016, do you see anything being done on the pension front, Charlie?
Well, I suspect they'll try and come up with another cockamamie scheme to pretend like they're going to save money. It'll allow them to kick the can down the road, not make the hard choices they have to do in terms of revenue and spending, and throw it to the Supreme Court again. And, a year from now or 2 years from now, we'll be having the same discussion because the Supreme Court will say once again, guess what, guys? When the Constitution says you can't diminish or impair the benefits, that's exactly what it means.
Yeah, I think the pension situation and other issues are part of what makes the current stagnation particularly frustrating, because Illinois has some really big problems that have kind of gone back into the shadows while we're focusing on the current budget impasse. You look at pensions, you look at K-12 education funding. There was some push to try to make that more equitable and to work on that system that a lot of folks believe is dated and needs some work. The conversation about that has all but stopped. The Senate president has brought it up a little bit, but it seems pretty unlikely that's going to happen next year, too. So, what's going on with Rauner's conflict with the leading Democrats and the lack of a budget is just sucking all the air out of the room, and these other issues, some of which will get worse as we don't address them, are still going on. They're just not getting the attention.
And one of those is infrastructure. I mean, I think that a capital plan, for roads, bridges, things like that, is something the state probably could use. All you have to do is drive around on some of the streets. You'll see what I mean by that. And I think that is something that I could see. That could be the type of thing that helps break a little bit of gridlock, I think, because everybody would benefit from that, Republicans and Democrats. So that may be something that could be in the final mix here in the spring, but it could be several months before we know.
We mentioned courtrooms, and we were talking about the civil side of things with the Supreme Court's rejection of lawmakers' attempts to fix the pension. But we saw a couple former members of Congress from Illinois showing up in courtrooms, Aaron Schock and U.S. House Speaker Dennis Hastert. Anybody want to elaborate a little bit on their cases?
Well, I will say about the Hastert case, to me that was the most surprising thing that happened all last year in terms of government and politics. I was just floored when I heard that he had been investigated and indicted and then pled guilty, because my recollection of Denny Hastert as a lawmaker was he was a pretty studious guy. He was a hardworking guy. He was what I considered one of the better legislators. And I recall back in the mid-80s when the deregulation of the utilities was a major issue, major challenge for the state. Hastert and a guy named Jim Keane, who was a Democratic representative from Chicago, largely handled it in the House. And they did, for people who were laymen and did not have the background, they did a really good job of putting together a very solid package. And it still sticks in my mind as an example of what kind of bipartisan cooperation you can get and the work product that can be produced if people are willing to sit down and negotiate in good faith. And so that was my recollection of Denny Hastert as being a hard-working state representative, probably the last guy that I expect to get in the kind of trouble that he wound up being in. So as I say, to me, that was the biggest shocker the whole year.
Probably also surprising to me related to that case was just how quick from start to finish, from indictment to sentencing that was handled, in part as he was apparently making an effort to keep quiet what was behind the original hush money. The other thing that we saw was the resignation of Congressman Aaron Schock after questionable spending practices. And he was kind of a new type of congressman for Illinois. He was young, he was handsome, and he also really sought the limelight, and in the end, that undid him, Sean.
Well, I think he was always a smart fellow. I remember when he came into the legislature, what was he, on the school board in Peoria,
right,
when he was barely out of high school himself?
Youngest state legislator at the time
so,
when he came in.
Yeah, smart fellow, and you talked to him. He knew the issues, and again, you don't know what always is going on behind the scenes. And, you know, what really seemed to get him, of course, was questionable spending, and that included spending of campaign money and other things. But that was really a surprise, I think, to a lot of folks. And again, a rising star for the Republican Party, certainly, and somebody I think that was actually probably a rising star for Illinois on the national scale. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
Well, and the very things that kind of made him a rising star in a lot of ways, because he hadn't really done a lot legislatively, were, you know, this his high profile,
right,
his looks, definitely to some degree, and, you know, all this being out there on Instagram and having, you know, all these kind of flashy pictures of his travels and things like that, I think got people asking some questions about, you know, where's the money coming from for some of those things. You know, that's what made him popular to some degree, and it's also what may bring him down.
And how PBS played a role in that was rather interesting as well, a Downton Abbey-related office. I thought that was, you know, interesting, quite a feather in the cap, I guess, for PBS.
Right, just goes to show the influence of Downton Abbey. The show's going to be coming to its last season, and it managed to help bring down an Illinois congressman.
No cliffhanger with the congressman's time in
although
office.
Actually, I mean, we are still waiting to see those federal investigations play out, so there is something as we go into 2016. There could still be another very expensive Italian loafer to drop as we see what's going to happen with the former congressman.
I'll go around the table. We have a few minutes left in the show, and kind of get, we'll call it our Notes from the Field year-end edition, but it'll allow you, if you want to talk a note from the field, that's fine. Or if you want to tell our listeners what you think an issue will be worth watching or in another issue of note from this past year. And I will start to my right-hand side with Mr. Brian Mackey.
Well, I don't know if I can take two just quickly. One thing I think that's been interesting looking back at this past year has been the sort of lack of transparency we've seen from the governor's office. There have had to be lawsuits to get it as public schedule. And it's not, you know, this is not necessarily Governor Rauner is the first one to keep a lot of his public schedule hidden and redacted when he finally does release it to reporters. But it does seem to be continuing that tradition, even though he had campaigned on being transparent. And that sort of came to a head this, you know, Christmas week that came out that he had actually left the country and his staff isn't going to say where he is, or they're not even going to say why they won't say where he is. So he is in some undisclosed foreign location. I mean, he could be building houses for the poor in Africa or skiing the slopes in the Alps. We just don't know. So that's something that has struck me, the lack of transparency in the past year. Going into next year, I think we'll need to keep an eye on criminal justice in Illinois. That could be a real area of bipartisan consensus. There's been a commission that's working for most of the past year. They should be having a report released any day now, could even be out by the time you're hearing this, looking at some things that Illinois can do to really reduce the mass incarceration that has its prisons teeming at more than 150% of their design capacity.
Illinois Issues, Jamie Dunn.
One of the things that I found interesting just in this past week or so is I've been working on kind of our roundup of new laws that will go into effect starting in 2016. And I expected to find that there might be far fewer new laws because, you know, the thought has been that there's been all this kind of impasse and folks not being able to get along and get anything done. But what I found was that there's, I believe, over 230 laws kicking in. And I went back, I've done this for the past few years and compared it, and that's actually pretty comparable with what we've seen in the last 2 years. Now, we haven't maybe seen as many high-profile changes, but then you kind of have to remember the legislature's done a lot in the last 5 or 6 years with legalizing same-sex marriage and medical marijuana and, you know, banning the death penalty. So there was a lot done. So if you just look at the numbers, legislation maybe didn't suffer under the impasse the way that the budget did.
We've made so many things illegal every year for the last 30 or 40 years that we had to start legalizing things in recent years. Charlie Wheeler, your look back.
Well, we've been talking about the current budget situation for fiscal year 2016. Guess what? In just about a month and a half, the governor is slated to deliver his 2017 budget address. So this could very well be the first time in modern Illinois history that a governor proposes a budget for a fiscal year before the prior fiscal year's budget has been enacted. The date is February 17th.
And Sean Crawford.
Well, I think, you know, the most high-profile local official in the state of Illinois is the mayor of Chicago. And it's been quite a tumultuous couple of months here at the end of the year for Rahm Emanuel. What I could foresee going, this is really going to test him and be, you know, his legacy is how he handles the current situation with the police department. And I think just the African-American community having no faith in him right now. If things continue to worsen there, I don't see him leaving office. He won't resign, I don't believe. But I think the sharks will start circling, and you may see some people in state government and other places who might decide, hey, this is a possible landing spot for me in the future. Could be very interesting to watch his political career over the next several months.
Got any names you want to throw out?
I don't want to speculate, but I think that that's a job that a lot of people would like to have. As hard as that job I think could be, I think there are a lot of people who would want that if they saw him as vulnerable.
And certainly the sharks do know how to swim in Lake Michigan around Chicago. One other note I want to make is leaving office at the end of this year is the Auditor General, Bill Holland. And Charlie, is he just the second Auditor General we've had, or third?
He's the second Auditor General since the position was created by the 1970 Constitution.
And he is one who I think truly has done the job well. Illinois has been well served by its Auditors General thus far, but he always seemed to lay it on the line, and it was interesting to watch him go head-to-head with the Blagojevich administration at the time. But I think Bill Holland kind of deserves a round of applause as he heads out the door at the end of 2015. That is another year in the books, and that's our time for this edition of State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Thanks to Sean Crawford and Jamie Dunn for joining us as guests. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.